faith, hope, inspiration, and edification. Welcome to the Edify Podcast with Billy Halliwell, a show that cuts through the cultural noise to explore the biggest headlines and issues of the day. Let's dive into today's show.
Hey, 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 what's going on? Welcome to the Edify Podcast. I'm Billy Halliwell, and I am excited to dive in today. I'm having a guest on who is somebody I have followed for a long time. His name is Justin Brearley. He is a podcast and radio host out in the UK. He's also an author. He has a show called Unbelievable, and I recently actually appeared on the show to debate my new book, Playing with Fire, A Modern Investigation into Demons, Exorcism, and Ghosts. So I appeared alongside Michael Shermer, an atheist, and we had this fascinating conversation. Obviously, Michael is not a believer, doesn't believe in demons, and here I am. I've written this book from a journalistic perspective, but a Christian perspective on this topic. And so we had a really amazing chance to sit down and talk about that. And Justin, who moderated that discussion, he's been doing this since 2005, where he brings together atheists and Christians. He brings together even people in the Christian church who have different viewpoints on all sorts of different issues, from gender to anything you can imagine. He is bringing people together to talk about these things. And what is so fascinating about Justin is that he has heard hundreds and hundreds of atheists. They've come on his show. He's probably heard every atheist argument 50 times or more, maybe 500 times, I don't know. And yet has not only maintained his faith, but continues to be a powerful apologist. And so we're going to be diving into that in just a moment. But I wanted to address one of the biggest headlines since we last heard from one another here on Edify, and that is the death of Rush Limbaugh. One of the things for me, just as a Christian, looking at how we interact on social media, on Facebook, I've talked a lot about this on this show, and I've talked about it in other media appearances, that the way that we behave is really toxic many times and completely unhelpful. And what I mean in this particular instance is that when somebody dies, to be relishing in their death, to be enjoying it almost, to be mocking it as though somebody deserved it, that is an unhealthy, abnormal thing for us to be doing. And when I look at the cultural landscape, and then you look at the responses that people have, they'll say, oh, well, Rush Limbaugh was a terrible person. And so I don't know if you guys are paying attention, but when Rush Limbaugh died, the things that were trending were really unfortunate. I'm not going to recount all of them, but they were attacks on him, and there were people tweeting jokes about his death. And the callousness with which that sort of thing comes is really troubling. And then that response, well, this person's a jerk anyway, right? I'm not weighing into what I think about some of the things Rush Limbaugh has said or not said. That's not the point. The point is that our behavior towards somebody else is not dependent on the way that person has behaved or acted. Our behavior towards somebody else is supposed to be love your enemy. If you consider Rush Limbaugh your enemy, why would you not still love him? Be kind to those who persecute you. Pray for those who persecute you. I mean, you look at Jesus's words and you look at the way we behave as a culture. And look, I get it. Not everybody's a Christian. I can't demand that of people. But I can grieve over the state of where we are right now. When you look at the news cycle, when you look at what's going on, it's really crazy and unfortunate. And we've got to be the ones to stand up and be like, look, we're not going to be a part of this. We're not going to tolerate in our own lives that kind of behavior towards others. And at the least, we can hopefully set that standard, set that example, because right now we are truly, truly living in some really bizarre times. And I think we've got to be the ones as Christians to stand up. If you're not a Christian and you're listening, awesome. You stand up too, right? We don't need to be attacking people after their death. We can take the step to be kind to other people, even those who are not kind to us. And so rather than dive into a million headlines, I wanted to bring that up because I think that is so essential to where we are right now. And if you watch the first TV, you could see I did a video segment on this very topic of Rush Limbaugh's death this week. So you can head over to the first TV and watch that. And listen, grab my book, Playing with Fire, a modern investigation into demons, exorcism, and ghosts. A lot of what we're seeing happen in culture and in people's lives has biblical roots. And listen, I'm a journalist, I'm a Christian, but when you look at the demonic, you look at evil, there's so much to unpack there. And I think a lot of times we don't talk about these things in the church. And so the takeaway, grab the book. but really, let's be kind to other people. Let's love others, love God and love others. That's what Jesus commands us to do. When we come back from the break, we're going to be diving into our interview with Justin Brearley. We will be right back.
This podcast is part of the Edify Podcast Network. Edify is a faith-inspiring app that brings together thousands of the best Christian podcasts in one place for your listening enjoyment. Cut through the noise and grow your faith by diving into the world's top Christian podcasts today. Download the Edify app for free from the App Store or Google Play, or by going to edify.app. That's edifi.app.
And we are back with more of the Edify podcast. I'm going to be bringing on in just a moment Justin Brearley. As I told you at the start of the show, he is the host of Unbelievable, an amazing podcast and show you're going to want to check out. It's in the UK. It's on all available podcast channels. And he, again, is a guy who has been bringing people together from the atheist and the Christian world to have these complicated and tough discussions. And he is resolute in his faith after talking to hundreds and hundreds of atheists. And so with no further ado, let's welcome Justin to the Edify podcast. Hey, Justin, how's it going today?
Yeah, very good. Thank you, Billy. Yeah, great to be with you. Thank you very much for the invitation to join you on the podcast.
Well, I've been watching and listening to your podcast for a while. And the thing that really fascinates me is that at a time when so many people are unable to have dialogue and to have conversations, and there's so much hate and anger on social media, and you know this, but for you to be able to sit down and bring people together who don't share the same idea, whether that's within the church, outside of the church, obviously having Christians and atheists come together and talk, and to walk away from your show, Unbelievable, which is the title of the show, and to feel like, wow, that was a really great conversation as a listener that I had a chance to hear. How do you facilitate that? What goes into making sure that you can have a setup of a conversation that's going to be fruitful?
Yeah, I think honestly, it's come with time, the ability to bring together the right people, to make sure it's the right kind of feel in a conversation. You know, when I started the Unbelievable show and had this crazy idea of bringing Christians and non-Christians together on a Christian radio station of all places, you know, there was some pushback, you know, from some of the listeners. They were like, haven't we got enough atheists already on the BBC? and that kind of thing. But so, and to be honest, you know, I don't always get it right. There are some shows where I think, hey, I could have brought in a better person on that side or this side. But overall, I found that actually when you do create a kind of space, a neutral space where you can have these kinds of conversations, amazing things can happen actually. And the important thing for me is to kind of remain as neutral as I can in that space. And just, you know, let the audience make their mind up, because I do believe Christianity can stand on its own two feet intellectually, but you will be challenged. If you listen to the Unbelievable show, you will hear different opinions and, you know, diverse voices and objections to Christianity. You know, you came on the show recently, Billy, to have a debate with Michael Shermer. Really wonderful discussion though on demons and exorcism and that kind of thing based off your latest book. And I love it when it happens. You know, it's not going to be for everyone, but I think there's a crying need to have that kind of a space for civil conversations. And for whatever reason, God's given me this platform to have that and to be able to just facilitate, you know, hopefully fruitful, light-bearing kind of conversations in a culture that's otherwise very, very divided when it comes to these sorts of things.
Well, and if we're not challenged as Christians, how are we to then really understand what we believe? I think this is something that gets lost in translation. You know, in America, there's so many conversations right now about cancel culture and, you know, this sort of pushing out of certain views, making sure that on college campuses, certain people can't come speak. And of course, there's a limit. There's a certain type of person you may not want to come and speak. But the problem is that you sort of have had this divide where people who have normal viewpoints or viewpoints that are held by millions of people are suddenly sort of not allowed to be there. And it's interesting to me because I've always said it actually puts the majority perspective in a really difficult place, because those young people on college campuses, for instance, those secular young people, they're not actually being challenged at all to understand why they believe what they believe. And so when it comes down to a conservative liberal, and I'm oversimplifying it, debate in America, and I think the same thing applies to the church, it actually puts the people who aren't Christians, right, in a negative place. But for us as Christians, when we're not willing to listen to those conversations, it's the same effect. It puts us at a disadvantage. We can't answer the hard questions if we don't know what the other side believes, right?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm not a fan of kind of living in a Christian bubble. I mean, it's harder to do that anyway where I am in the UK. you know, we're kind of that much further down the road of secularism and so on. So it's harder to live in that bubble. But I think that bubble is getting popped and has been popped a long time ago by Google. You know, you're only a Google click away from some kind of radical skepticism around the Christian faith. So what I've tried to do with the show is to create a place where you can have those kinds of honest conversations, but hopefully where you will hear good people on both sides discussing it. And I agree with you on the cancel culture thing. I think it's bad news for everyone, this idea that some subjects you must not talk about, there are some things that you can't go near and so on. I think we have to have the ability to talk to each other without getting offended. I think a lot of what cancel culture boils down to is just, I'm too offended by your perspective to listen. And that has to apply to Christians as well. We have to kind of grow a thicker skin sometimes. Too often I see a kind of knee-jerk reaction when people are confronted by objections or questions or even hostility to the gospel. But we are told that's going to happen, but it's how we respond that's important. And I kind of see Unbelievable as a bit of a boot camp for people coming to these discussions and hearing it modeled well, hopefully, how to do the gracious, engaging, respectful kind of conversation that we're asked to do, you know, in 1 Peter 3:15, always be ready to give anyone an answer to anyone who asks you about the reason for the hope that's in you, but do it with gentleness and respect. And that's the bit that we sometimes struggle with.
Well, and you do a really good job of that. I had such a good time on the show, and I actually even reached out to Michael after, because even though we share very different worldviews, I think it's important that we have those friendships and those conversations. And to your point about a lot of Christians, and I have fallen prey to this as well, it's easy to be in that bubble. And I remember in 2012, I think it was, the Reason Rally in Washington, D.C., this major atheist gathering. I was the faith editor at The Blaze at the time, and we were doing a lot of stories on atheists. And it was really fascinating to me to enter in. So I went to go cover it. I didn't really tell them I was coming or anything. And I was there, and there was a camera guy there, and people knew who I was. And it was interesting. They came up and you felt like it was weird. It's like, oh, this is strange. And they were coming up to talk to me, and they were coming up. And it was actually a realization that they're paying attention to what Christians believe, what Christians are saying. And we ought to be able to have the same thing happen. If an atheist comes in, prominent atheist, that we know who they are. And I think a lot of times we don't, because we haven't listened. And your show gives people that ability. How many atheists would you say you have interviewed over the years?
Wow, that's a tough one. I mean, we've had, we're on, I think, over 750 odd shows of Unbelievable, believe it or not. Wow. We've been going since 2005. I guess, you know, if say definitely at least half of those to maybe three quarters of those are often with an atheist or skeptic of some description. I don't know, do the math, maybe between 400 and 500. You know, atheists that I've interviewed on the show. Wow. Yeah, it's weird when I think about it like that. Having said that, some of them are kind of come on, you know, a few times. So Michael Shermer, you know, he's been on probably four or five times over the years, because obviously there are some big spokespeople for atheism that you often get on. But it has been, I mean, what you said about the Reason Rally is really true. I remember when that happened. And what I often find is that while on stage you get these, you know, this was where Richard Dawkins and Lawrence Krauss and others were kind of doing their thing and saying, you know, ridicule them. You know, it was this era of this very full-on hardcore atheism. You know, that was kind of the apex of it, really, wasn't it? The Reason Rally, like tens of thousands of atheists getting together, kind of in a, you know, the Woodstock of atheism or something. But I find actually
when you actually sit down and talk with an atheist or a skeptic, you soon hopefully move past that kind of popular level kind of atheism. And once you actually get to know someone, you realize that there's more to people than just kind of the bravado that sometimes exists online or at events like that. And that's been the real joy, actually, is actually getting to know people as people rather than just as, you know, these caricatures we sometimes invest in people. So that's the good thing about having the kind of the long form conversation we do, getting it out of the kind of the tit for tat debates that sometimes exist on social media and everywhere else.
Well, and that, yeah, and I agree. It's really nice. I've had coffee, you know, I've had drinks with people who are prominent atheists. And when you sit down and have those conversations, you definitely get a totally different viewpoint, not just on that person, but on humanity. As Christians, we don't want to fall into that social media, again, the bubble of, oh, I'm over here, they're over there, they're bad people, they're, you know, and then you just, there's no interaction. You don't learn, you don't love others, which is a huge, yeah, you know, point here. Now, all right, so you said 400 to 500. So let's say you've talked to 400. Let's go with the conservative estimate here. You've heard every atheist argument on the face of the earth at this point, 10 times probably. What? How have you kept, because you are a Christian and you've maintained your Christianity throughout, which I think is amazing. How have you continued to be a Christian? How has it changed your faith? How has it enriched your faith to talk to so many skeptics?
Yeah, well, to be honest, about the 10-year mark of the show, I did an Ask Me Anything type. Question episode, and this was the most common question that people asked me: why are you still a Christian? You know, you've had all of these high profile atheists on, some of the leading skeptics in the world, and I think I have heard just about every argument in every different formulation that it comes against
times.
Christianity, exactly. But that was actually the kind of thing that prompted me to write the book I then ended up writing. It came out in 2017, but it was called Unbelievable: Why, After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. And really, it was my case for, well, it was both telling the story of the show, but really saying, okay, I've heard all these arguments, but here's why I still believe Christianity is a more compelling account of reality. Because what I learned kind of early on, I think, in the show is that we all come to life, to reality, with a certain set of assumptions, a worldview, if you will. And very often people think that, you know, Christians bear all of the burden of responsibility, the burden of proof when it comes to their faith. They're the ones who have all these strange beliefs in God and the supernatural and Jesus and whatever. But actually, we all come to reality with a certain set of beliefs, and they all need to be defended and justified. And my atheist friends, that's no different. And the most of the atheists that I have interviewed over the years have subscribed to something like naturalism. That's the view that all that exists is matter in motion. Everything can be explained by physical forces, essentially. But that's quite a big faith claim at the end of the day. It actually takes a lot to believe that, because there are so many things that just don't make sense, for me at least, on that. Things like our regard for human value. Where does that come from? Is it just an illusion sort of foisted on us by some, you know, random process? The fact that we do believe in objective things like truth and beauty. The fact that we live in a universe which seems to be crying out for an explanation beyond itself, when you just look at the physics of it, that seems to be the case. And most especially for me as a Christian, when I look at the historical record of Jesus, the way that his story has shaped the entire modern world, and the fact that at the center of it is this extraordinary claim about a resurrection, which I think stands up remarkably well historically. So all of these things for me say it's not all on one side. Atheists need to, you know, explain their beliefs and how they arrived at it and why they think that's a good account of reality. And I found, while there's plenty of questions left and mysteries and objections that I'm not saying I have the perfect answer to when it comes to Christianity, I still have found a more compelling vision of reality, a more satisfying way of understanding the world. It makes sense of me. It makes sense of the world. And I've yet to hear an argument that really, you know, would make me change my mind on that.
Yeah, in the last couple of years, I've thought a lot about the natural versus supernatural. And this whole discussion, even with Michael, you know, we were talking about that when you're talking about demons and things that seem very strange and bizarre. But then you think about nature itself. We've divided things into what we're used to, which we would define as nature, and things that seem strange. But the nature in itself is strange, right? Yeah. The fact that we're sitting here having a conversation, that we have consciousness, that there are trees, that the earth would either burn or freeze if it was off its axis like a degree, you know, all of these things that
that come together to point to the fact that it's almost insane to claim that it was all an accident. But yeah, a lot of people believe that, and that's fine. But when I look at it all, I'm like, well, none of it's really natural. We're just used to those things. It's our existence, so we live in it. And so when you start to think about things that way, I do think it poses an even greater challenge. And I agree with you. My experience in having interviewed not as many atheists as you have, but a lot of atheists, is that there's sort of this disregard for that. And it's fun to sit down and have those conversations because, you know, they don't have any more moral high ground than we do. And yet we can sit here and talk it through. And I love that you have walked away with a stronger faith throughout that process. And I would encourage other Christians to engage in those conversations as well, because I do think, again, it really helps. Now, shifting gears to England, because I got to ask you about what is it like to be a Christian there? Is it difficult? I'm in America, so we could talk about that too. But I'm curious, the existence as a lifelong Christian there, what that's been like.
Yeah, I mean, I would say, you know, like the rest of culture, we do get influenced a lot by the US. So in a way, especially given the digital age we live in, there's a lot of overlap, you know, between the American experience and ours as well. But I think we do have a different kind of background, history, obviously, here in the UK. We've had an established church for a long, long time. America was kind of founded on the principle of the separation of church and state. And so there's been a more of a, I would say, entrepreneurial spirit, maybe historically, in the US when it comes to faith, which is why I think you see a different kind of approach to faith overall. I guess the UK is more known for its stiff British upper lip kind of formalism, you know, but that's maybe a caricature. Actually, the place where you've seen the most growth in the church in the last several decades is certainly probably in the more Pentecostal, charismatic kind of wing of the church. I think a lot of people assume that, you know, Christianity in the UK is just grand cathedrals and people in robes processing or something like that. There is that, but actually, there's been a huge kind of, I would say, charismatic revival that has gone on in the UK over the last several decades. And that informs a lot of, you know, what the church looks like today. And while we have seen church, you know, attendance going down over decades, and obviously we're in the midst of this crazy pandemic, and who knows what exactly things will look like when we come out the other side of that. But having said that, I am confident that actually the UK has always seen these kind of troughs and peaks. We've seen revivals through people like Wesley and others. And then we've seen that kind of die off over generations, where that kind of the zeal, the passion has sort of been forgotten. But then we see God act in a new way. And I see some interesting fresh roots of revival that were going on before the pandemic. And I think we'll carry on after, where I'm encouraged that God is not finished with the UK, that actually there's interesting things, that the secularism that we've seen sweep through with things like the new atheism, I don't think that satisfied anybody. I think the new atheism kind of came and collapsed again almost as quickly as it arrived, because it didn't offer any actual answers. It didn't help people to lead their lives. And Christianity is simply ready and waiting when people have realized that their technology isn't going to help them, the politics isn't going to help them, that social media is not the answer. Christianity, Jesus will be waiting there. And we've just got to be faithful, I think, in praying. And no matter what the statistics and the numbers look like around us, remembering that God isn't finished with us. I'm sure the same is true of the US in many ways, but maybe we're feeling it. We've been feeling that way a bit longer, if you like, in the UK.
Yeah.
But my faith and hope is that actually God's doing things nevertheless.
Well, what you just said is so important, because I think a lot of people in America right now are waking up in the middle of nowhere. A lot of Christians are like, what is going on? And people, you know, there was this sort of, because of the history, right? There was this always the separation of church and state, but the expectation that politicians would carry with them the Judeo-Christian values that we were used to. It was part of the culture. And so there's always been a lot of cultural Christianity. So you would have, in 2007, you had 78% of the country saying they were Christians. Whether or not they really were, they were saying they were. So there was that was a nominal number. And you're seeing that number plummet right now, because what is happening here is that the social benefits of being a Christian are gone. They no longer exist in America, and they've evaporated very quickly. And so you're down to 65% now, and the estimates are that it's obviously going to go lower. So that number, to me, it's semi-concerning, but I think what we're really seeing are the suicide statistics, the overdose, the things that are happening here that are rapidly happening. And I'm not going to listen, I'm into the social sciences. I have a master's degree in social research, but I'm not a practicing social researcher. So I'm not going to assign it all to Christianity coming out culturally, but there are some interesting correlations there. And so what you just said, though, is really encouraging, because I think you guys have been dealing with this a little longer, and you have that sort of inspirational take on, hey, obviously we know God is not finished. We know what the end of the story is here, right?
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people here aren't sure where to go, how to move forward, how to interact in this new culture, where not only are the benefits gone, it's actually become a little more difficult to speak about faith, yeah, to talk about faith. So any advice you have for
listen to Unbelievable, because we've kind of been doing that for a while now, you know, trying to find that place where you can have those conversations that are harder to have these days. I think you're right. I think a lot of it is because, and maybe this is a more recent phenomenon in the US, but the kind of the natural public authority that Christianity has been undermined. And I think there are people who react by trying to kind of pull power back in some way. Mm-hmm. But there are maybe some kinds of power that you need to let go of and remember that Christianity was birthed as a, you know, without power. And it actually grew and was at its most authentic when it wasn't the dominant state religion or anything like that. In fact, in some ways, it's when Christianity gets allied to state power that sadly some of the worst things can happen. But for me, I don't see necessarily that it's a bad thing sometimes to be reminded of what it looks like to be a Christian without power, where you are actually having to rely on your faith, on Jesus, and not on the instruments of state and so on. Now, there is always a place, I think, you know, I believe there is a flourishing society which is based on Judeo-Christian principles. And we've got some fascinating voices here in the UK as much as in the US reminding us of that at the moment, especially in the wake of the kind of identity politics, cancel culture movement, all of that stuff going on in culture. You've got people like Tom Holland, for instance. His book Dominion came out a year or two ago. I've had him on the show a couple of times, and he's a sort of secular historian, but who wrote this huge book basically saying we owe everything we value in our society, Western society, to the Christian revolution. And the problem is everybody's forgotten that. And that's the problem, is we've completely forgotten our history. And now we assume, well, sure, everyone's going to have enlightened values and believe in equality and democracy, right? That's just what anyone sensible thinks. Well, no, thousands of years, people didn't believe that. They believed slavery was fine. In many parts of the world today, people don't believe that. There's no reason to think that this will naturally happen. There is a reason why the West is the way it is. It's because of Christianity. And the problem is, as you say, as we forget that, as we kind of have this assumption that secularism is going to kind of continue to provide the fruits that Christianity began, there's no reason to actually assume that. And so for me, it's important that we kind of remind people of why they believe what they believe, why they are the person they are, and kind of pray that we can faithfully be in that moment when God gives us the opportunity to speak authentic Christianity again to people, because I think they will reach the end of their resources ultimately. I'm not saying, you know, the world's going to hell in a handcart and Christianity will be here just to kind of mop up the thing. But there is a point, I think, at which people realize, I can't, you know, the structures, whatever, they're not serving us anymore. And that's, I think, when my prayer is that we will see a Christian revival. Now, it may look different to revivals of the past, but people still need God, whatever the technology or the culture looks like. And I think God is calling us to sort of think creatively about what that looks like now for Christians, followers of Jesus now, to be able to engage with them and the questions they have and the society that we're seeing kind of develop around us.
Yeah, and we were seeing even before the pandemic, and especially during the pandemic, these really fascinating moments on beaches in California where, and you've seen this, where hundreds of people are accepting Christ, right? So you were starting to see that happen. There are these pockets around America right now, I think, where there are these little mini, you know, revivals. And so I'm hopeful of the same thing. I think a lot of people in the US really were focused on politics and how can you make sure that the policies that are going to be in America are going to align with Christian values. And that's a whole other podcast conversation. But you know, my focus for years was politics, right? I mean, I sat and met with Trump a month before the 2016 election with a group of 30 Catholics and evangelicals who were never Trump. I wasn't a never Trumper. I just never took a position. And I listened to what he had to say. And so I was sort of there for that. And now here I am, and I'm thinking, we're so focused, and this isn't just a politics thing, but I think all of us, on things that are not what really matter. What really matters is changing people's hearts, and at an individual level, and then at a collective level, hopefully enough people change, but it's about reaching people. And so I've tried to strip away all the things that aren't about that and to focus in on the things that are. And I think once we do that, and I'm not perfect at it, but I'm working towards that. Once we do that, I think we're in a much healthier and better place, and we're doing what we're called to do, which is what you're doing on your show. And I love it.
Yeah. 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 I believe ultimately absolutely the same, that it is about ultimately the heart has to be changed before you see outward change. I think though, there are steps along the way to that with individuals. And very often I think apologetics, which is what I do, is about kind of starting to help people change the way they see things a little, just so that you strip away some of those assumptions. I mean, like I said, that key one that surely we all just believe naturally in human rights and equality and everything else. And even just helping to puncture that intellectual, supposition that this stuff just exists is helpful to simply show people that that's not actually the way the world is, even today or in the past. And that there's a reason why you believe that. And it's because of this thing called Christianity. Now, that doesn't mean it's true, but it should give people pause to think, what have we thrown the baby out with the bathwater, you know, when it comes to this, the current sort of view of Christianity in the wider culture, that it's kind of anachronistic and something from the past. Because I think there's actually an interesting move back. I mean, I've said, I'm writing a book at the moment, actually, on kind of how the new atheism grew old and what's replaced it in the secular conversation, because I think there's a fascinating new conversation going on now with public intellectuals like Jordan Peterson and others, where they are now realizing Christianity actually made sense of our world. It gave us a narrative to live in. Now, these people aren't necessarily convinced it's true, but they can see the danger of kind of getting rid of it, because it creates this vacuum. And what's going to fill that vacuum is the question. And that's where you get all the kind of, no one knows what to believe anymore or how to live their life. That's the point. And though they're told, you know, yeah, by the public, the media and the, you know, oh, you can be whatever you want to be. The problem is that doesn't help, because no one can agree what that flourishing life looks like. And so I think there's a fascinating new conversation developing now, where people are realizing, like it or not, Christianity gave us a way to live, helped us to make sense of our life. And for me, it's about connecting that desire to kind of have something meaningful, for meaning to be reintroduced, and to show them that it's actually not just useful, but it's true. That's where I think we've got an amazing opportunity.
Well, the thing that I love, as we round out to a close here, the thing that I do love about relativism and this push toward everything is true, everything you want, do whatever you want, whatever works for you. And we're seeing this show up in polling. When you go to American Christians, even, you start asking them questions about, you know, is the only truth you can know your truth? And people are like, yeah, it's like, what? It doesn't even make sense. But what's funny to me is, as soon as you say, well, Christians believe this, this, and this, well, that's not okay. That's restrictive. Well, if you're going to be a relativist, and you have to say, okay, then Christians, they're right to believe that too. And so everybody has a line. That's my point. It doesn't matter who you are. There's a line somewhere. And so this idea that relativism is ever going to be consistent or fulfilling in any way is, it's an impossibility. It won't be, because you're always going to have a problem with something. And for many people, again, totally, they're right. Their problem is with some of the ethics and morals that come along with Christianity, right? So it's interesting to watch. Now, I kept you way longer than I said I would, because this is fascinating. Right. But I have to ask you, and of course, I'm going to close with a loaded question that you'll probably be like, why are you closing with this? But I want to know the thing for you. Maybe it's an objection. Maybe it's one thing, or maybe it's not. I don't know. But that you have heard in these many conversations with atheists that has given you the most pause, kept you up the most at night, been the hardest to contend with.
Gosh. Yeah. Well, there's a lot of things, you know, that I find difficult, troublesome, that I've just kind of put in the question mark box, and maybe I'll never understand them this side of eternity. One of the things I mentioned in the book, actually, that did give me a couple of sleepless nights, was the first time I had Bart Ehrman on. He's a well-known New Testament critic who lost his own faith. And he was coming on to debate the historicity of the Gospels and whether we've kind of have the original words of the New Testament. There's this thing called the textual transmission. And his case was that there have been so many changes over the years that it's impossible to get back to the original. Well, you know, when I read his book on that, I thought, crumbs, this is going to be this, you know, my faith was shaken a little by this. But there's that proverb, isn't there, about, you know, one person's case seems secure until another person comes to give the other side. And that was the case in this one. I was able to bring on opposite him Cambridge New Testament scholar Peter Williams and Peter J. Williams. And he did a wonderful job at explaining how the things that Barr often sees in his popular literature, at least as a glass half empty, are actually a glass half full in his view, because actually there is an amazing amount of historical evidence for the Bible, for the New Testament documents especially, and that it's the very science, if you like, that has been developed over the last century of being able to put together the manuscripts and compare them all side by side that gives us an incredibly accurate picture, actually, of what those first manuscripts looked like, even though we don't have the original documents, because, you know, they were written on papyri that, you know, faded and rotted away. But actually, we have more sort of evidence, really, for those original documents than we have for any other writing in history of that sort. So when it came down to brass tacks, when we actually discussed it, it turned out there were only about four or five particular bits of scripture that Barr Emin even had questions about, the actual, and the, none of them affected any area of Christian doctrine. So it was one of those ones where it's so helpful sometimes. You hear one thing, but you have to look into the other side. And that's for me is kind of the story of my life, really, hearing objections and having the opportunity to dig in and look at what other people say and realizing actually Christianity consistently seems to come out and be able to, you know, hold its own corner. So that was in a way, you know, a troublesome one, but one where I eventually felt like, no, this makes sense. Now, I'm not saying everyone is like that, because there are still questions about other things that, you know, as I say, I may not know this side of eternity, but I'm kind of, what I often say is this, I have enough to trust in Jesus for what I do know of Jesus, to trust him for the things that I don't know, the things that might remain a mystery. And that is what faith is, ultimately. We're not going to have all the answers, but actually Jesus has given enough for us to be able to trust, to take that step, which isn't just a blind step. It's actually about trusting in Jesus because of what we know, because of the experience we have, because of the evidence we have. And for me, that's what a thinking Christian does. They put their trust in Jesus because they know it's going to support them.
That's amazing. All right. So where can people go to grab the book and to listen to the show? Because now everyone wants to hear the show. If you've been listening to this, you've got to go and listen to Unbelievable. Great show. And I love that term, thinking Christian. That's what we want to be. We want to be people who are challenged, not because we want people to walk away. We want people to be solidified and to understand what it is they actually believe. So where can people go to listen and read?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you what, I'll give you a link that you can post with this show, which kind of is kind of a link tree, which gives people lots of options, Billy. But you can just search for Unbelievable on podcast. So just search for Unbelievable with a question mark and you'll find it there. The book is available wherever you get your books from, Amazon and so on. And again, you're looking for Unbelievable, Why After 10 Years of Talking with Atheists, I'm Still a Christian. I have actually got signed copies available from Premier, though, and I'll make sure you've got the link for that. If you want to find out more about our upcoming big conversation as well, that's the place to go for that is thebigconversation.show. That's a special series, and we've been running it for the last 2 years. We've got our third season coming out in April, where we invite some of the biggest names in atheism and Christianity to debate some of the biggest questions around science, faith, and philosophy. So look out for that as well. We've got some fascinating shows coming up. So to find that, it's thebigconversation.show.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
God bless you, Billy. Thanks for having me on.
That was Justin Brearley of Unbelievable. Great conversation. I hope you guys enjoyed it. And we will be back next week with another episode of Edify with Billy Hollowell. And by the way, before you go, check out the Edify app, edifi.app, on your web browser, also edifi in the app stores on your phone. Download it. You can listen to thousands of Christian podcasts. And if you go over to edify.app/podcast, you can see all of the original and partner shows that we have in our network. There's some amazing shows you want to check out. Crazy Happy with Daniel Fusco. I actually co-host that one with Daniel. We've also got Let's Talk Purity, and that one's an amazing one about what purity really means, how to live a Christian life, and the list goes on. There are so many great shows. It's edify.app/podcast. I will see you all next week.
Thanks for listening to the Edify podcast. For more transformational and faith-inspiring podcasts, head over to edify.app, where you can stream thousands of Christian shows right now. And for convenience on the go, download the Edify podcast app today from the Apple and Google Play stores and at edify.app.